Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, do you hear that? Do you hear that in the background at all? That's
what's that?
It's the sound of silence from NBA Twitter. The Lakers won an important game. Brandon Ingram has continued his stellar play of late. LeBron James is back, and suddenly NBA Twitter is a little, I don't know, laid back. It's kind of weird.
They're busy trashing all of our young guys, acting like they're all terrible. So, you know, no big trades happen, right? Bro, after all of the things they've gone through over the last month, Lakers are a game out of the eighth seed. So, you know, could be a lot worse. LeBron did not look great, and he even admitted he was about 80% of what he normally is. But Lakers still showed a lot of good things. There was a lot of frustration. It was a very strange game, but they got a huge win. Difference between being one game back and three games back is really significant with this many games left.
Especially, you know, as they, because you don't want to have to win two straight games to get that tiebreaker off of the Clippers. This gives them a little bit more leeway in that respect too. The other thing too, as everybody would have predicted, the Lakers out free throw shot the Clippers. it was a 14-point swing, which, like, this is, I mean, I don't like doing the I told you so thing, but, you know, on the rare occasion I get to, this is what you and I talk about a lot, where it's a legitimate way to win games is to actually come through on those shots. And for, like, the Clippers, I'm sure they're absolutely kicking themselves tonight. Like, that's a terrible way to lose a game.
Yeah, no, that was an oddly just not sharp performance from them, even though they were shooting the hell out of the ball. Lakers helped a lot with helping, you know, so far off of 3-point shooters. Yeah. But yeah, no, they really gifted the Lakers some points at the line there.
Did anybody ask, like, was that a game plan thing? how far off the Lakers were from shooters? I know. So the Clippers, I believe they're one of those teams that shoot the ball really well. I think they're like the fourth best shoot 3-point shooting team in the league, but they don't get as many up. So I'm not sure, was it something that the Lakers planned, or was it just laziness?
I mean, it's LeBron being LeBron.
That helps.
In his first game back, right?
Yeah.
Right. Where, you know, he was just kind of, so they were switching all of off ball screens, which is not uncommon. But if he was getting screened, he was just leaning on that screen. Like, he's not fighting over it or under it. He's just,
yeah,
like, we're switching this. And then the closeouts were short, and that's not unusual, but it wasn't just him, right? I think part of it too is Avery Bradley's had a really bad year from behind the arc, and they were cheating off of him. You're going to cheat off of Shea. Shea's more of a mid-range type of guy at this point of his career. And, you know, Patrick Beverley too he's a good 3-point shooter, but Lakers gave him some wide open looks, and he started out at least, I think he was 5 for 7 from 3-point range. It was probably game plan to some extent, but probably laziness to another. Even though they defended great for like three quarters, and then it went to crap in the fourth and OT. I'm just glad they pulled out the win.
Yeah. Dude, it would have been an absolute killer.
Oh, man.
If they would have lost that game and LeBron played 40 minutes, like, that would, I don't know if I'd be able to record.
No, I was just going to say, like, I was just going to, like, shut my laptop. Just like, you win. You win.
I want to talk. So basically the way, and we've already started talking about it, but tonight's show is going to be a little bit about this game and what it means moving forward. Some of the notes that we saw from the game specifically, I want to talk about Brandon Ingram. And then segments 2 and 3, we're going to send everybody off into what will probably be a pretty loud weekend, I'm thinking. So we'll get you guys ready for that. So I want to start, though, with Brandon Ingram. He continues his really good play, right? He's shooting the absolute crap out of the ball.
Yeah.
It's hard. I don't want to oversimplify it and take away from his game by saying that he's just making the shots that we don't like him taking. I think there's a different rhythm to the game that he is playing right now. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing too that I want to say is Man, I lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
I was going to jump in and save you. So if you did that for me the other day, so I was going to do that for you. But carry on. Sounds like
it's been a long 48 hours. I'll just say. But the other thing too that I wanted to note was a quote that he said after the game, where they asked him, you know, what was it like having LeBron out there, and he said, "Well, my game doesn't change." And like I don't want to harp on it. But that's the problem, right? Like, sure. that's the concern. But I want to let's talk about the positives from how he's been playing lately. Have you noticed anything different, or is this just a hot streak?
Two things that I've noticed different. One, technique wise, where on those mid-range shots that we always lament, he's leaning back on a lot of them in a way. Even so, I've always talked about how, like, when he drives from the sideline toward the middle of the court and he's fading either to the side or fading backward, he's really good at knocking those down. He's not as good at knocking those down coming off of a high ball screen where he's driving toward the hoop, has to pull up around the elbow, and he misses those. One little change that he's made recently is he's leaning back on those too. And he seems to be more comfortable with the rhythm on that. It hasn't been long enough for me to be like, aha, now he's this high 40s, you know, low 50s mid-range shooter type of guy, because very few guys in the league are like that. But that is something that I've seen him do differently in that respect. And then you talked about, like, it's not just him hitting the shots. He's playing, like, with a different rhythm. I've noticed a lot fewer, like, record scratch possessions where the ball goes to Brandon and then it's like, you know, the next 8 seconds are him dribbling. He's being decisive, right? Like, if you're going to shoot those pull-up mid-range shots, like, basically, drive, shoot, or pass, like, but be decisive in how you're doing. I think he's been a lot more decisive. And then having Rondo, I think, has really helped put him in a position where he doesn't have to be the guy to set things up, but more the guy that's finishing and kind of knocking things down. And so that's all of that's combining to give him more confidence, and it's just building on itself. It's great to see.
Yeah. I'm happy for the kid. And
me too.
Look, I also think it says something, and I don't want to sound cynical. I don't want to sound like I'm writing him off already, but if I was a team interested in trading for him, or if I was a team that, you know, like the Pelicans might find themselves up against the wall, and we'll talk about that here in a bit, I think it is a really good sign that with all of this noise, Ingram is playing his best basketball of the season.
Yeah.
You can't overlook how important that is, or how meaningful it feels for somebody to go out and be able to do that.
It takes some mental toughness to be able to do that.
Yeah, and look, anybody who trades for him, or if the Pelicans do trade for him, he's going to be looked on to carry the franchise at least for the remainder of the season, right? If they make this trade at the deadline or whatever, maybe even moving forward, that mental toughness that he's showing right now is something that I would at least buy into, right? Like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have been really good, but the thing that people bought into the most with those guys was, wow, those were big playoff moments and they rose to them, right? This is a big moment in Ingram's season, and he is rising to it, and I think it's worth noting. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we are going to talk about the latest, not just in terms of the Anthony Davis situation by itself, but that Kristaps Porzingis trade was big for the Lakers today. Mm-hmm. It's very meaningful. So we're going to start with segment two. That's what we're going to talk about. And then when we go from there, we'll see where that conversation takes us. I'm looking on my screen, and right now Shaq is throwing somebody. So.
All right.
So TNT's having a good night. They're so much better when they don't do basketball stuff.
Yeah.
I would just watch them, like, hang out.
I think that's what they're going for, honestly, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I'm happy. It's always nice. Like, the last 20 minutes or so of Inside the NBA, where they're just kind of messing around, that's the best TV that comes out of that show. The stuff before then, when Charles Barkley is trying to tell me that players shouldn't have agency, like, that stuff can go. Speaking of player agency, though, Anthony Davis obviously trying to force his way out of New Orleans and reportedly trying to force his way to L.A. Kristaps Porzingis, I think, is an example of like why it matters that players have agency, right? Because he goes into, if we're to believe all of the reports at their face, he goes into. We should not. We should not. But at least like for, we'll treat it as such for right now. But if we're to believe those reports, Kristaps Porzingis walks into the front into the Knicks front office, says, "Hey guys, I'm a little concerned about the direction of the organization. I'm concerned that we aren't winning," and their response is to trade him, send him to Dallas. that's not great.
No, it's not. It's funny. Like, so first of all, no, we should not believe all of that, right? No. In that. There have been issues apparently with him. So his brother is his agent and they've been wanting more control. But all of that was set up. Like they organized this trade. They ask him like and I always kind of wonder like when the whole narrative gets set up by the team mm-hmm. as like, well, he's the one that wants a trade. And then 15 minutes later, it's like he's been traded to Dallas. It's like, did he actually like say anything to, you know, say, are you just trying to like prepare you to, I can't imagine being a Knicks fan today, man. Like
that's tough.
He's the best thing that's happened to them in like 20 years, man. Yeah. And at least since Amari Stoudemire signed in 2010 as a max free agent, people, I think Amari's one of those guys that is, as time goes on, people forget what a monster he was.
He was an MVP candidate to start that contract.
Right. And, but I can't imagine, like, they just traded him in a salary dump, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's wild.
It really is. And so Sam Amick, who I talked to basically right after the trade went down, I recorded a quick segment with him for Locked On NBA. And his immediate feedback from around the league was basically, all right, the Knicks have to – either the Knicks are insane – right, and they just dumped
very
somebody.
Possible.
Yeah, very possible. I mean, maybe Kristaps Porzingis just said James Dolan sucks as a musician, and they were like, "That's it, we can't do this anymore. That's the last straw." Or you know, there's some sentiment around the league of like, okay, what do they know, right?
Right.
And you and I spoke the last time. You and I spoke. I think one of the last things you and I talked about was, all right. Kevin Durant, there hasn't been anybody that you or I have spoken to that think Kevin Durant is sticking around in Golden State. The natural fit there, if he wants to go to a big market and be the biggest fish in a big market, it's New York, right? Mm-hmm. So it's fine to think that with Kevin Durant, and they have two max spots now, and where this affects the Lakers is that second spot can be very well set up for Kyrie Irving, who seems like a very natural Nick.
Yes. And then that has implications on an Anthony Davis move, yep. right? Like, so we've talked about Kyrie and the possibility of him being a Laker, right? That's in the I'll believe it when I see it category, at least for right now. But Kyrie going to the Knicks would certainly, you know, that would move the needle. Now, what I think Boston would ideally hope to do is trade for AD before, so agree to a trade in late June before Kyrie even hits free agency, helping to convince him to stay. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if that's the case. But yeah, Kyrie moving on from Boston would be very good for us.
That's just not how Boston has operated, is the thing.
Right.
Like Mannix came out with that report right away, trying to do everything he can for Ainge, and like goes out and he says like, oh, now there's even more reason for New Orleans to hold on to Anthony Davis to the end of this season so that Boston can throw all their chips in. They're all the more convinced that they have to trade for Davis to acquire Kyrie Irving. But you have all this recent history of Danny Ainge screwing up every relationship he has with another executive. So, like, why trust him? Okay, yeah, That's how it's going to work. You're definitely going to throw Tatum in. And I don't trust Ainge. And with all of this noise out there, now with Kyrie potentially going to New York or wherever, whatever second free agent might be joining Kevin Durant in New York, like it's to the point now where the Lakers can kind of not quite, let out a sigh of relief, but they can kind of, I don't think it's a coincidence that Dell Demps and Magic Johnson had their conversations basically at the same time of that this Kristaps Porzingis trade was released. Though if Brad Turner, as everybody knows now, who is probably the best person to follow on this on the story, according to him, the Lakers and Pelicans have been talking for a couple days now.
Yeah, and although BT walked it back a little bit in that he thought a deal would be done by now because Lakers have made their Godfather offer and they have not heard back from the Pelicans. Brian Windhorst actually painted a pretty bleak picture of the Pelicans aren't interested. They don't, they don't like the Lakers offer of, even if it was, all four of the young guys. And so what we're talking is Lonzo, Kuzma, Ingram, Zubats. And he said, even if it was two first round picks along with that, Pelicans aren't interested. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm too in my Lakers homer head about that. I think that the perception of the Lakers assets versus the Celtics, we went over this on the last show I was on, so I won't rehash that. If that's the case with the Pelicans, more power to them. The thing is, so look, I would love to have a second superstar on this team. I know how important they are. I do not feel like the Lakers should be in a position where they feel desperate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you go push all your chips in for Anthony Davis? I think you do. I'm totally fine with doing that. But if the Pelicans don't want to make a move, there are a couple of leverage plays that can be still be used even by the Lakers. So for one, they're saying, we're not going to get into a bidding war with the Celtics over the summer. If you want our deal, you're going to take it now because it gives us two opportunities at mm-hmm. a playoff run with two superstars as opposed to one. But we're going to pursue other things in the summer. So that reduces what the Celtics would have to give up for AD over the course of the summer. So that doesn't benefit the Pelicans either. But the Lakers, to me, it comes down to this. If Anthony Davis wants to be a Laker, he's going to be, whether it's this summer, whether it's this deadline, this summer, or next summer. And the Lakers can, we talk about them signing a second max guy and all that. What if they signed DeMarcus Cousins to a large one-year deal just to hold AD's spot? You don't trade any of the kids,
mm-hmm.
right? You get probably the best player that you can get. Now, he's coming off the Achilles, but the guys like that are usually better the next year after mm-hmm. they come back, right? Just get DeMarcus for a one-year deal, bring everybody else back, hold that spot, and if AD wants to be here, then he's coming here in 2020. Now, I understand that LeBron's a little older, but you've got a pretty good team, especially with how Lonzo was coming on before he got hurt. If this stretch of Ingram, if he's able to push that going forward. So for me, let me ask you this. Do you think that Magic is bluffing with that you have to take this now or we're not going to bother getting into a bidding war over the summer?
I'm going to think about it, and we'll come back and talk about it after the break.
All right.
I don't think Magic is bluffing, but I also, if we're to roll with the poker analogy here, it's not like he's holding the nuts either, right? Like he's, if we were to roll with the poker analogy, Magic is sitting on like two pair. With a flush sitting out there, right? Uh-huh. Magic is probably looking at his hand. He kind of likes his hand. He's willing to go all in. But if it comes down to, all right, we're just going to see, we'll turn over our cards and see what it looks like, then I kind of like where I'm sitting anyway, right? And I think he's right to feel that way. Like I was kind of not really surprised because, again, it's funny to me. Twitter is not the best basis for judging analysis, but it's funny to me how I'll see Denver bloggers out there say so-and-so and Jamal Murray and Monte Morris and Wancho is too much to give up for Davis. And I'm like, all right, I guess. Yeah. Sure. Uh-huh. I'll see Boston bloggers like, Tatum will have a strong game. See, this is why Ainge's decision is going to be so tough. Okay, no real blowback to that either. And then the Lakers are like, here's our offer, and people just kind of laugh at the offer. And I just, it annoys me, the double standards that are going. Like, the other double standard, now I'm ranting, but the other double standard that I saw out there today was the Lakers are tampering, and if they're so angry about teams not wanting to work with them, they should stop fucking tampering. And I'm like, Lawrence Frank is following Kawhi Leonard around everywhere he goes. What are we talking about here? Just come out and say it, guys. Just say it. I don't like the Lakers. That's it.
I don't care about any of that crap, man. Like, it's, I mean, I go on my rants about it too, but at the end of the day, like, it is what it is. We've talked about the reasons why and the ruined childhoods and the, like, everybody loves to hate the Lakers. And as a function of that, they love hating on their prospects. Seeing everybody friggin' love D'Angelo Russell now, like, and be like, oh, Lakers shouldn't have traded him away. I'm like, you dumb. Sorry, I'm not trying. I'm going to start cussing in 11 letter words instead of 4-letter words in a moment. But you dumb MFers, like, we're saying the same things about him 2 years ago that you're saying about these kids, while we were all telling you, like, no, that kid's actually going to be pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
And anyhow, so it comes with the territory. With the Lakers, I think your poker analogy is a good one. I do think the Lakers would prefer to sign a legit max guy to a long-term deal before, like, a DeMarcus Cousins type, right? I don't know if they're in the lead on any of the Kawhi or KD or Clay or any of the guys that are legit max level guys. I don't know if they're the number one likeliest destination for any of those guys. That probably leads to another conversation at a different time is, hey, you know, if they aren't, that's a bit of an indictment on Magic and Pelinka in front of, because that is what everything's
built.
That's the plan. But you don't throw good money off of bad, right? But that's part of the poker analogy too. Mm-hmm. And if the Lakers find themselves this summer not signing one of those guys, to me, like, the best leverage play you have is to DeMarcus Cousins is that, and I'm not a big DeMarcus Cousins guy, but he's, you don't get a guy of his caliber on a 1 year deal very often. He's kind of this unique case of this guy who's the second year recovering from an Achilles injury. We'll see how good he is. And if he's worth it, of course, mm-hmm. That's first comes first this season, but a guy that you can kind of punt cap space, but also have like a really good player, a really good number two option.
It's just like Brooke Lopez.
Sure. Right. It's like that, but I think a better player. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like, good DeMarcus is now. I don't think any of us really know as he comes back mm-hmm. from surgery. And then be like, you know, hey, we're still going to try and be as good as we can this year, and then bring AD in the next year when he's, what, 27 years old? And
right.
So, yeah, that's my argument in terms of what I think they'll look to do.
Yeah, I guess for me, and you and I talked about this before, though, like, where's the line in the sand? You know, like, obviously, if Anthony Davis has let it be known through Rich Paul, and Rich Paul has relayed this message to the Lakers that, no, you guys definitely have Anthony Davis. It's just a matter of when, right? That's different than, well, maybe it's Kawhi, and then the following year, maybe it's so-and-so, and the following year, maybe it's so-and-so. But I do want to know, like, at what point, where are they going to say, no, man, we have LeBron, you know, like, we got LeBron and let's actually vie for a title, because to have LeBron on your roster for 2 years and not really vie legitimately for a title, that's
not... I totally agree. My only thing is, like, what's the move?
Yeah.
To do that. I'm not saying that waiting until 2020 to sign AD is the first option. Mm-hmm. I think they'd love to get Kawhi or KD or Clay, or I'm curious how they feel about Jimmy Butler, right? He's a guy I would not go after in those circumstances, but I'm curious to see what they would think. Kyrie obviously would be great. I just don't see any of those. So if those things, like, what is the worst case scenario look like? How do they handle the offseason if they don't get those guys?
Yeah, yeah. That's a conversation we can have down the line. Let's actually get people ready for a weekend. What if we were to make, I'm putting you on the spot, so maybe I can go first here, but which Woj bomb are we going to catch over the weekend? You know, like, what?
Well, I mean,
what,
he just found out the Lakers and Pelicans were talking on the phone. So,
well, I mean, I'm using Woj bomb for like the noun of like whatever, you know, which, what would be the Turner bomb? Like, you know, like the Turner torpedo, you know, the Turner and Tanya torpedo. But I'll go first because I'm kind of sort of putting you on the spot here. The thing that I think is going to come out, now that LeBron is healthy, or now that LeBron has shown that, okay, he's made enough progress to get back on the court, I think he sits out against Golden State just because he played 40 minutes in his first night back. And I think from there, there's a way to utilize leverage for the Lakers to say, okay, we saw LeBron back on the court. What do we absolutely have to do? And I think we started to get a hint of it when we heard that the Suns were mutually interested in Lonzo Ball. Like, Lonzo was interested in going to Phoenix. The Suns are mutually interested. I think Phoenix is more capable of putting together better assets if you want to go full rebuild from scratch, if that's a direction that that New Orleans wants to go. So I think the big bomb that we might see over the weekend is that the Lakers, Suns, and Pelicans are trying to figure something out between the three of them.
That's not bad. I don't think it's going to be anything. And maybe that's the biggest surprise at all.
That would be a big one.
All with all of the noise, right? I think that this trade deadline is going to come and go. Maybe they find something for KCP. Maybe they find a way to get a Trey Burke, someone like that. Mm-hmm. Look for some buyout candidates in the next, a month from now. I think it's going to be all sound and fury signifying nothing until the summer.
Yeah. Did you think it was a big deal that the Lakers and Pelicans were talking?
No, I knew they would be able to get in touch with each other and they'd be able to discuss it. Like, you know, the Pelicans are doing their due diligence right now, and excuse me, and there's no real reason for them to do something on Friday as opposed to next Thursday on the deadline. Like, if it happens, I think it probably happens the day of the deadline or the day before as they weigh their options. These are the types of trades too that, like, ownership and executives and all of that are heavily involved in, because
sponsors and
right. It so impacts the franchise that it's not just I think it's not GMs like talking nerdy basketball stuff. It's how do we sell tickets? What's our marketing program? Things like their Jumbotron. Like, how do we, when we introduce the team, what's the intro video? Things like that. Right. So yeah, I'm not surprised that they ended up talking, but I don't think it's going to get done. But if it does, I think it'll be closer to the actual deadline.
Yeah. The only thing, so I want to make sure that people understand the difference between frustrations that they weren't talking and frustrations that they are ignoring the Lakers as like a potential trade partner to make a trade right now. Like, those are two separate things. On one hand, it's fine to say that, okay, we don't like the Lakers offer right now. Like, Adam on the Locked On NBA show made a really good point that he said that, you know, he's not positive that the Lakers trade package offers a legitimate superstar in the mark in the making, right? I don't think New Orleans is going to be able to get that anyway, but his concern is that they're also going to be good enough to make it so that New Orleans might never be bad enough to draft first overall. Right. Which is, I think that's a fair concern. I think that's perfectly fine. And where I was annoyed was when I heard that Demps was specifically not talking to the Lakers. at the time of that report, where I got annoyed was you don't learn where those two sides stand without that communication. And like for Dems specifically, it's imprudent because you need to find the best deal no matter what, right? And if that deal happens to be the Lakers or the Lakers plus canvassing the league for assets that make more sense, that maybe the Lakers assets could get you, you can't figure that out if you don't have those conversations with the Lakers.
Well, that's why he did. Yeah. You know, it was bad reporting. It was, and I think just a little thing like that just gives you some degree of insight into the level of access that certain people have into the Lakers organization. And they still got to get on TV and they still got to get on Twitter and act like they know what they're talking about. And they don't always know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. How pissed do you think Woj was that he didn't, that Haynes was the one who told everybody that LeBron was playing tonight?
Like, I mean, Haynes is LeBron and Rich Paul's dude. Yeah. Like he's been their guy for a while.
Yeah. And Woj has very much not been their guy.
Not their dude. No.
Very much not been their guy. All right. Let's send everybody out into the weekend. It's tough. It's a great win that the Lakers had last night. By the time you guys are listening to this, huge win. They maintain pace with everybody. Like I said, I don't think LeBron plays over the weekend or against Golden State because they're probably going to lose anyway. So like why risk it there? But getting that win allows them to be able to do that is the thing here. So huge win there. Big developments with Chris Porzingis and the Lakers there. We'll see what this weekend has in store for us. As always, if you guys have any questions or comments that you want on the show, let me know in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes. I will get to that Sunday before Super Bowl. God, if the Lakers do anything of meaning during or after the Super Bowl, I'm just warning you guys.
Is there a football game this weekend?
Yeah. Yeah, it's more of a party, but yeah, there's football as the party is going on. Like it's adjacent.
How much does the NBA dominate social media?
It's like wild,
right? Like it's like someone reminded me earlier the Super Bowl this weekend. I was like, oh yeah, I totally forgot. So,
well, what's funny is that like you see all the stuff that the NBA is putting out there on social media, the NBA is dominating social media. The story today that I saw, or one of the few stories that I saw from the NFL, just because I'm a sports nut, but one of the stories that I saw was Goodell is still trying to convince people that coaches just aren't bringing on Kaepernick because he doesn't think he's a good quarterback, or because they don't think he can win. And it's just like if you compare the two stories, no matter how you feel about Kaepernick or whatever, but if you just compare the excitement around the NBA to that, that story's 2 years old, guys.
Yeah.
There's nothing, you know. Anywho, have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of your weekend. I will talk to you on Monday. And yeah, get those questions in. And Pete, drink some water or something.
Bro, I've been dying. I'm sorry. Thank you guys for putting up with me.
No, get better. We're all pulling with you to get better. Have a good one, dude.
You too, man.